Good morning and welcome to Taking Care of Business. I'm Jackie Mitchell. Oh, all right, no, I'm not. She's actually off taking care of her own business and I'm standing in for her today. I think she's up in Brisbane, gallivanting around in the sunshine, which is fantastic. Hey, today it's all about speaking skills. How do you be better as a speaker? How do you get more speaking opportunities to build your business? Now, today's show brought to you by our friends at eView Real Estate. We really value their support and encourage you to check out eView Real Estate when you're in the real estate market. Today, I've got some fabulous guests we'll be speaking with. Later on today, we'll be speaking to the guru of presentation skills, Zerafina Zara from Forte Presence. If you want to build on your presence, we're having a chat with her. Also, we've got the Victorian president of the Professional Speakers Australia, who will be speaking with us. And also, as a double banger, he is a branding guru from Crimson Fox. He is Russell Pearson. He's in the room with us. Welcome, Russell.
Thank you, Warwick.
Hey, thanks for coming along here today to RPPFM, Taking Care of Business. A branding guru, Crimson Fox. So tell me, when it comes to branding, why should you be a good speaker?
Well, it just gives you so many more opportunities. The great thing about being a speaker is that these days, having a brand that actually has any sort of presence is really about creating thought leadership.
Right.
That's what that speaking opportunity actually gives you.
Okay. So now I've been to plenty of little networking places, whether it to be, you know, BNI, your local chamber of commerce, whatever. And frequently I'll see they'll get there a minute, 30 seconds, 10 seconds, whatever. Give up and give us your USP or give us your pitch or whatever it is. And I've got to say, most people are pretty woeful at doing it. So what would you say? Like, what are the key things as a branding expert? What are the key things that you want to get across in your 30 seconds of fame?
One of the mistakes that a lot of people make is they're creating this. This is how we solve a problem for somebody.
Right.
Now, it's great to come at a problem that you solve, but come from the point of problem. What problem state are people in? What are you actually fixing for them rather than always talking about this solution, the new business solution?
Yeah,
everyone's saying that sort of thing. So what problem do you solve for the individuals you want to do work
for? Yeah, yeah. Okay. And because half the time also is people get up and they talk about themselves and people in the audience don't care. Mm. They're like, well, what can you do for me?
Absolutely. Yeah, talking about yourself's never going to get you anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Interesting point. Actually, I went to the doctor the other day and he said, oh, what do you do? I said that I'm in advertising and marketing. And he said, well, that's fantastic. That's what I tell people when I'm on holiday and they leave me alone. So being very clear about what people are actually going to care about is key to coming up with that 30 seconds.
Yeah. Cool. So what if you've got more than 30 seconds? What if you've got you're the featured speaker and you've got 10 minutes or 15 minutes to get up there and give a message? What should you do? Should you turn it into an advertorial and buy my stuff and shutsu fries? Or how would you go about that? How would you approach it?
It's about giving. Like basically, if you want to get something from anybody, whether it's a group of people or whether it's an individual, it's about knowing what it is that you can give them of value that'll actually have them perceive you as valuable.
Right.
Yeah, so in a 10-minute pitch or, well, it's not a 10-minute pitch, isn't it? It's a 10-minute speaking opportunity or whether it's even a 45-minute, that's when you really start needing to take some time and plan out what it is you're going to say and how you're going to deliver it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so an example would be if you've got a highly technical thing that you want to share with people, make sure that they're either a highly technical audience or if they're not, how do you dumb it down to make it accessible for the actual audience you're speaking to? So who's the audience?
I think we've all sat through enough PowerPoint slides with spreadsheets and details and graphs that everyone's like, nah, brain not working anymore. Okay, so what about for you? So, you know, you run Crimson Fox, you're a branding expert, you're about positioning people in the market. So if someone said to you, come along and speak to us for 20 minutes, what would you speak on? Like, how would you get your message across so it's sort of a sales pitch, but it's not a sales pitch? You know, what kind of stuff would you do?
Again, it comes back to the audience. So, mm-hmm. for instance, one of the things that we speak about through Crimson Fox is digital marketing.
Right.
And so I've created a piece called Digital Ice Cream.
Right.
Where it's far more accessible to talk about ice cream and how there's all these different flavors of ice cream.
Oh, I'm a fan of ice cream. Right? Yeah, I'm with you.
And it's about how you can have them relate the idea of there's all these different flavors and we want to sample some of these flavors rather than there's all this scary technology out there and it's going to come and get us.
Right. So essentially you're making it consumable for the target market.
Yeah, absolutely. It's packaging.
And ice cream is very consumable. Mm. So, okay. So we now know a little bit about, you know, the kind of stuff you get across. So the next question becomes, how do you get the opportunities? Because I'm sure there's plenty of business people out there going, oh, I'd love to speak at something, but where do I go? So where do you find the opportunities?
Well, a lot of it's going to come through your network, but I think before you even go to decide that I'm going to become a public speaker or a speaker of any sort, it really pays to understand why you're doing it. So for instance, in my line of work, it's about providing an opportunity for my business, Crimson Fox, to get more work in the long term.
Yeah.
But if you're just speaking because you want to be up on stage and actually you think that people are going to be interested in what you've got to say, that might not be the reason. It could be an ego reason.
No.
Yes. So being clear about why you're there is going to be very important. Yeah, okay. Then once you know why you're there, you're then also going to know who you need to speak to.
Right.
And so you're going to need to know that this is my target market.
So it sounds like what you're talking about here is having a basic business strategy. It's the same old thing of like, you know, for what reason am I doing this? Who do I need to speak to? And then how to go and target them.
Yeah. If you're in business for any length of time, opportunities are not hard to come by.
Right.
But getting the right opportunities is always going to be the most difficult.
Okay. So let's say you're relatively new to speaking for your business. So you're after opportunities, but you don't want to have too big an opportunity just in case you stuff it up and you embarrass yourself.
Yeah.
Where's a good place to start?
Well, there's also all sorts of Rotary clubs, right. Local business networking areas. In fact, it's a great way to do it too, because if you look at any of the big world-class comedians, when they're actually putting together their big sets for their live show at the end of the year, they'll start working on that material through some of the smaller clubs.
Right.
And they'll actually work up to the larger. So actually starting, trialing your speaking work in or material in lots of different smaller areas and not even necessarily being paid for it is going to give you the opportunities to get the paid work.
Right. Okay. Great. That's fantastic. All right. So now in your role as President of Professional Speakers Australia.
El Presidente.
Viva El Presidente. We need the presidential music as he walked in the door. So as the Victorian president. So what do PSA do if you're a speaker? What do they do for you?
Well, ideally, it's the peak body for professional speakers. So what does that mean? We're an association of people who speak for a living.
Yes.
And so I guess there's a small bit of gatekeeping there. We do certainly help emerging speakers, but it's really that association of professional speakers.
Okay. So, all right. So this is where they're on the stage, they're getting paid thousands of dollars or something to speak to the audience, that kind of deal.
Yeah, certainly some of them. But on the way there, they still need to be educated and grow and learn their craft.
Okay.
So that's where people like Zerafina, who we're going to hear from later, come in really, really handy. There's other people that we would point them to, but basically, if they come to us, if emerging speakers are coming to us, we can show them what is the next step.
Right. Okay. So rather than helping them with speaking skills, it sounds like it's more about how do you build a speaking business and maintain a speaking business.
It's absolutely about that. And it's also about that peer group association. I don't know if you've ever seen any movies about professional speakers, but it's an incredibly lonely life for those people who do it on a full-time basis.
I think, what's that one where he's got his 9-step plan? It's a Little Miss Sunshine. Little Miss Sunshine. And he's got his 9-step plan and the lights come on. There's 4 people in the room and he's got this data projector thing.
Well, that's the thing. Sometimes it's going to be like that. You could end up talking to 3 or 4 people in a room and then the next day go and speak to 2,000.
So
it can be very lonely in that space. And I guess that that association, Professional Speakers Australia, gives people a chance to have that peer group community around them.
Yeah, fantastic. Hey, we're going to go to a couple of commercials. Before we do, if people want to find out about this PSA, what's the contact details for the Professional Speakers Australia?
It would be professionalspeakers.org.au.
Right.
You can find them there. And no matter where you are in the country or if you're even local to Mornington and Victoria, we've got events just about every month and you can find those on the website.
Fantastic. Russell Pearson from Crimson Fox. Are you going to hang around and chat to us later on?
I will.
Excellent. Very, very good. We're going to go to a break. We'll be back in a sec.
Thank you.
All right. Ed Sheeran, I'm a mess. And so many people, when they're about to step up on stage, are an absolute mess. The stats are something like a third of people would prefer to die than get on stage. Well, I think it's more. They're more scared of dying than they are scared of speaking. So basically, they choose to die versus speak. The person that we're going about to chat to now, the lovely Zerafina Zara from Forte Presence, is going to help address some of those issues. Good morning, Zerafina.
Good morning, Warwick.
So what do you think of that statistic? Is it true in your experience in dealing with people? Are people that scared of speaking?
Yes.
Right. Fantastic. Excellent. Good. Next point.
Next point. Pretty much. I think it varies. It varies on situations. So sometimes people are quite comfortable speaking in a boardroom or addressing a small group of people. Yeah. But then when it becomes a larger group of people, it's
funny. Changes. Like if they're at the back with friends in the house, there's 20 of people, they can stand around and have a chat, not a problem. Put the same 20 people in a suit and have one of them on a stage and the nerves kick in.
Yes.
So what about the fantastic advice people give if people are nervous, such as just imagine the audience naked? Does that really help?
I can think of nothing more useless than thinking of your audience naked. Apart from the fact we can only actually process about 4 pieces of information at a time,
right.
That's going to take up some valuable brain real estate.
Yeah, for some of us, it's going to take up all of it.
And even more, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Depending on who's in your audience.
So if we've got some listeners out there now who are thinking, you know, I like the idea of speaking, but I just can't. My hands shake, I get all sweaty, my heart's beating. What should they do? How can they get into a zone? Now, they're not going to completely calm down, or maybe they will with your skill and expertise, but what can they do to be more focused on presenting?
Well, the good news is there are actually a lot of things that you can do.
Right.
One of them is that, is to acknowledge that those feelings are really normal. So our brain technology, basically, in the way that it's evolved, a lot of it's come from when we were hunter-gatherers. And your body is responding as if you're in an attack from a predator,
mm-hmm.
which if you notice from Mick Fanning's fighting off the shark in the competition, that's useful. So what that does is it narrows our focus. It takes all the blood, unfortunately, away from your brain and pulls it in your larger muscle groups. So with Mick Fanning, it would have gone into his biceps and his legs for explosive power. And his brain at that point in time was not thinking, what's a really interesting and creative way to fend off a shark? Which is a really good thing. That's a really good survival strategy. So it's good to know that in the moment of speaking,
right.
That's not our point to be thinking of new and creative ways to deal with those nerves.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There are some things we can do beforehand, but and that's really where we want to spend our time improving those things.
So what are some of those things that we can do?
Okay, so for an absolutely quick fix before we even if we've done nothing else, we can do what we call a power pose,
right,
which Harvard researcher Amy Cuddy talks about in a TED talk, which is just standing like Superwoman, Superman or Superwoman, so taking up more space. So in nature, what we do is we take up more space when we are a leader or when we're showing dominance. So think of it, a lion roaring or a frilled-neck lizard opening up.
Yeah.
So if we stand in that space, it sends a message to our body that we are in a position of leadership.
Right.
And what it does is that ups hormones in our body, so that ups our testosterone, which is our sense of capability and capacity,
right,
and it downs our cortisol, which is our reactivity to stress.
Okay.
If you do that for 2 minutes in what is often the green room of many public speakers, that even a toilet cubicle, if you stand like that for 2 minutes, that will actually change your physiology and give you a better chance to reduce some of those adrenaline responses.
So it's just the standard pose, like the classic Superman pose you see in there with
Wonder
his cape
yep.
in the back,
hands
or the,
on,
or
hands
the Wonder
on
Woman,
hips,
or
taking up more, you know, legs spread apart.
Right.
So when we, on the inverse is true. So when we take up less space, we send a message to our body that we are submissive and vulnerable.
Right.
So another study that Amy Cuddy did was saying, okay, if I look at my iPhone compared to it was an iDevices study because of the different size,
yes.
compared to an iPad, compared to the larger screen, what does that do to our assertiveness? And they found that on the smaller device, people were less assertive.
Right.
So we're sending messages to our body. So this is the future, from the outside in.
The future people, we're all going to be all these introverts working around because everyone's on their phone all the time. Just get the big phone and you'll be the boss.
Get the big phone.
All right, so we've got the power pose. That's got us pumped up. We hold that for 2 minutes. What else can we do?
Well, in terms of the planning leading up to it, so one of those things that's helpful is naming the story. So noticing, okay, what's my story around this? So I worked with a singer once who said, okay, what's your main fear about this performance? And she said, that it will be a total failure. That it will be an absolute utter failure, that nothing will work. And we had a bit of a laugh about that and said, okay, so what do you want to call that? Let's name that story. And she said, okay, well, let's call it the failure story.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be superbly imaginative. But what that meant is that every time she thought about that, she said, was able to say, I'm noticing I'm having the thought about the failure story.
Right.
Instead of having a thought and thinking that's real. So having the thought, I'm going to fail,
real. So we're putting it in a little box so we can put it to one side and go, ha, that's just a story, that's not reality.
Yeah. And it just helps to take, doesn't make it go away.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
But it just helps to take a little bit of the
it's sort of a
of
reframe
it.
Of it so it's not as powerful over you.
Yes.
Fantastic.
And it gives you a bit of space from it so you're not buying into it. You're not getting hooked by that thought.
Right.
Another thing to do is to practice too, because that's, I think, one of the major things is practicing in front of a mirror. And my other
there's going to be so many people going, I'm not standing in front of a mirror doing that.
Or a video, practicing what they're going to talk about.
Yeah.
My thing, I feel, because my background is as a performer as well as coaching people in public speaking.
Yeah.
And I have done practice in front of a mirror or in front of a video and thought, that's really embarrassing that I'm doing that. And I'm so glad that I'm doing this before other people see it rather than after.
Yes.
Rather than getting that video and seeing what you're doing.
Fantastic. Well, that's three little things that are going to help people. So what about, because the other thing is that a lot of people have this fear of like, well, what happens if during the presentation something goes wrong? Now, be it that they knock their glass over, forget their place, the AV goes down, something like that. So if something happens and we fix whatever the something is, how do we recover from that? Because I think a lot of people are going to be blown out of the water by the thing happening. How do you mentally recover from that?
I think the thing is to notice that any kind of performance, anything we do across a time period in front of other people, is that it's about the next moment.
Right.
And that if we dwell on that, it's okay to acknowledge that and you know, or have a laugh about it, because we're human as well. And I know a magician who's written a book which has got great tips for any public speaker. It's called Win the Crowd. Is that he actually plans some failure into his performance at the beginning.
Right.
I mean, he'll then go towards the end, but it humanizes us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It makes people realize, oh, you're just like me. And if someone's perfect, they're a bit plastic.
Yes. Yes. Okay. I was having a conversation with a friend yesterday about mum has some beautiful roses, or had when grew up on the farm, some beautiful roses. And a friend came over and looked at the rose and said, that's so perfect, it looks artificial.
Mm.
Because if things are too good, we don't see them as being real. And there's a big call in the business world for authenticity. And we're having a conversation before coming on air about being authentic. So it sounds like this magician's all about be authentic on stage. Would you say that for speakers in general, to be authentic on stage?
I would. It's a funny thing, because it's this authenticity can be sort of a bit plastic in itself. So,
right.
And some of the things about authenticity are that it's, I think the thing to think about is it's okay for little moments of vulnerability
right.
as well. So we don't want to be in the audience and be feeling uncomfortable because we feel like you need therapy. but we're actually okay if you're stumbling a bit,
yes.
or if you tell us about something that you've struggled with,
yeah.
That helps us to humanize that story and to make us feel like, oh, you're just like me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's, because that's the other thing, and that's the next question that I've got for you, is that as a performer or as a speaker, you've talked about the importance of the crowd and winning the crowd. So as a speaker, maybe you're a bit nervous, or maybe you've been doing it for a while but you're just getting better, how do you capture the audience? What are some of the simple things you can do to capture an audience? Or connect to them. Because there's, you know, I think we've all seen people who are so nervous, they come on stage, no matter what happens, they are saying what they've rehearsed in their head, and it just feels like they're just there, just spitting it out. How do you get that engagement?
Well, really, I mean, the rehearsing is a fantastic place to start, because if you if you rehearse and you really practice something, people are afraid that's going to make them seem rehearsed.
Right.
But what it actually does is it frees you up to be in the moment.
Okay.
And to respond to your audience.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
one of the things is to make eye contact, is to look at your audience, is to ask them how they are.
Right.
Just be friendly, the way you would if you were.
So if you're in the barbecue at the backyard with your 20 friends,
yes,
it's the same thing. Just
yeah,
sort of,
absolutely,
you know, you're the host essentially.
And that's the best way to look at it, is if you are the host of a party,
yeah,
you invite somebody in and you ask them how they are and you try and make them feel comfortable.
Right.
And as a performer, that takes, you know, in any kind of speaking or performing sense, that takes an enormous amount of pressure off you, because
right,
it's all about your audience.
Yeah.
Are you making them comfortable?
Yeah.
Have you made your points clear? Because the thing that I think that we get nervous about is that we become self-conscious.
Mm.
And what's the opposite of self-consciousness?
Yeah, yeah. So it's thinking about other people,
thinking
not about yourself.
Thinking about other people, yeah, not yourself. And we actually have a big bias about self-consciousness anyway, which is, I read a really fun study recently about the spotlight effect,
mm-hmm,
which is that we think people are paying much more attention to us than we are. So we imagine that people can see our shaking hands, and unless you amplify that by putting a piece of paper in your hand, people don't see actually how nervous we are. They see the bigger gestures.
Should you mention that? Because I hear a lot of people get up on stage and go, oh, I'm really nervous, or sorry, my hands are shaking. So from stage, would you mention it, or should you just pretend it's not happening? Because as you've said, half the people don't even notice or care anyway.
I would say for the most part, and this is the thing, they're kind of tools, not rules.
Yes.
I would say for the most part, I wouldn't mention it, because
okay,
you are aware of it and other people are not.
Yeah,
if something's really obvious, it's okay to mention it and for that vulnerability reason.
Yeah.
But also if you're saying, I'm really nervous and nobody's noticed that, What it does is it just takes a little bit of the air out of the tires of then focusing on the next moment.
Right. Okay.
I kind of feel like that's dwelling in that spike, because your adrenaline will actually spike the most when you just before you get on stage and
right,
just as you start. But what'll happen is that'll plateau out too.
Right.
And that's the point where most speakers say, I'm feeling really nervous right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are.
Yeah, yeah.
But that moment's going to pass.
It'll pass. Okay. So, you know, basically name the elephants in the room. So if you knock the water off the table, go, oops, I've just knocked the water off the table. But if you're quite nervous or you've got weird thoughts going on, no need to mention those.
Yes, because most people don't notice. The study that I loved is that people wore a highly embarrassing T-shirt. So at that
right,
time it was Barry Manilow. And they did another study with a Vanilla Ice T-shirt. So this was to college students.
That's not
students.
Embarrassing. That's awesome.
Oh, it's cool now. But
yeah,
this
yeah,
was to college students in the 90s. And they estimated that twice as many people would notice the T-shirt than did notice the T-shirt. So their sense of embarrassment amplified
right,
what they thought people noticed.
Right.
So people will notice big gestures on stage.
Yep.
And that's the other thing you can do is practice getting sunlight under your armpits. Because if you move your arm, it sounds weird. It is weird. But what happens is if you create some space, what that does is that your arms, when we're in that shark attack mode, our arms pin themselves to the sides of our bodies.
Right.
Because that is our response to protecting our internal organs and our lungs. Good response.
Yep.
Again, shark attack, I want to stay alive. But public speaking, that's exactly the same thing my body does for
right,
that. But if I can get some more space under that, I'm sending the message to my body that everything is safe and
okay,
is okay, and that will help to mediate some of those.
Fantastic.
Responses.
Awesome tips. Thank you so much, Zerafina. Now, the lovely Zerafina is going to be around with us after the break. We're going to have a bit more of a discussion, but we're going to go to some ads. We'll be back right after this. A bit of Fox on the Run. Love the flashback, because we've got the Crimson Fox in the studio, Russell Pearson. He's running all over the place. And Zerafina Zara from Forte Presence. So we're talking about professional speaking or public speaking, or how do we be a better speaker? We've had some great tips on the basics of it and some tips on how to get the gigs. But what if you want to take it to the next level? So, Russell, let's talk a bit about your speaking. How did you get to be a better speaker?
Well, it really started, I was actually a teacher, so
right,
I started in that space. And then when I went into business for myself, I got together with a community of other business owners and we started teaching each other.
Yep.
So that grew and we started creating our own events, and then more and more people came, and we ended up in front of 60 people audiences
yep,
educating them on our own area of expertise.
Yep.
And that's how it started. And then from there, opportunity continues to come. So it's one of those things, if you want to get started, just get started.
Yeah. So what would be, what do you reckon would be one of the best things to do to be a better speaker?
Your own stories. I think that is crucial. So actually going through, and this comes back to what Zerafina was saying before. If you own your own stories, it is natural. It yes. comes across as honest.
Yeah.
And so working out what stories that you've got that are your own and not stealing somebody else's experiences, and then developing those into something that's actually going to be not just educational but also entertaining for the audience. Yeah. So working that craft.
What? Because I think we've all heard some of the classic old stories, like the starfish story and the lighthouse story with the armored, whatever it is, an armored destroyer or something. Or
absolutely.
And I've heard some speakers hear someone else's story and go, oh, that's really good, I'll use that. Mm. So what you're saying is that's really not appropriate.
Well, the other thing, there's a Lisa McGuinness-Smith, who was an absolute legend in the Professional Speakers Australia.
Yep.
She is a global speaker. And even if you're on the other side of the world, there is someone who will know you from Australia or vice versa. If you tell someone else's story without their permission, they'll find out about it.
Yeah.
And then all that credibility you've gone and taken all that time to build just washes away. And that's part of brand as well.
Right.
Brand is about yourself. It's about amplifying what's great about you.
Yeah.
And so creating your own stories is a great way to do that.
Yeah, cool. Hey, Zerafina, what about when it comes to making your audience laugh? Is that important?
It's great. If you can make your audience laugh, it actually makes them more open to listening and more open to learning. And actually, from the music world, one of the things you taught is that if you want to sing a sad song, you don't want to introduce it by saying, "I'm about to sing you a very sad song," because people go, "Oh no, time for a beer." but that if you can make them laugh first, that will make them more open, more emotionally open to the next content.
Right. But what if you're not very funny? Like, you know, how some people sort of go, it's one of the little messages they give themselves, "Oh, but I'm not funny." How should you try and be funny? Should you learn jokes? Should you go to a place to learn how to be funny? Or do you just, what do you do with that?
Oh, I'm probably not the person to ask for that. I try and tell my boyfriend jokes and he says, "How about you tell me about your day?" So I'm unintentionally funny.
Yeah.
And the thing I think is about being yourself. So I saw a speaker once who was very introverted and had this really funny posture and was kind of being really odd. And I watched him and I thought, yeah, I definitely coach against that. And then I watched him and I was like, this is fantastic. This guy's great because this is who this person is.
Yeah.
And he was consistent in that way. So I think if you force yourself to be funny and that makes you uncomfortable, that's probably going to make your audience uncomfortable too.
Yeah. Russell?
One of the things you can do though, Rodney Marks, again, another one of our members, he's a great comedian.
Yeah.
His son actually helps write a lot of these jokes. So you can actually find people out there that will work with you on your own stories and actually find some of the humor elements in them.
Yeah.
They just give you the tools that you're actually going to work with yourself because they are your stories.
Do you use humor much in your stuff?
I'd like to use more humor in my stuff. I'm trying to add humor
I've actually
my stuff.
Heard your tiger joke that your daughter told you. That's an interesting joke.
That's a great joke. I love it. And the great thing is it was told by a 3-year-old, so I get away with it.
Yeah, you do. What about the dad joke? There seems to be a lot of speakers who whip the dad joke out. Is that a good or a bad thing?
Depends on the audience.
Yeah.
You get dads in the audience, it's a fantastic thing. Yeah. You get mums in the audience, and as long as you're happy with the shaking of the head after that
line's dropped, then it's
great.
And sometimes it is okay to have a joke that doesn't work because the response is actually better.
Yeah, and not talking about you in particular, Warwick Murray, but you are a master MC, and I've seen you drop some dead jokes right on the floor and then pick it back up with your response to how that fell down.
Yeah. And I think part of that is what Zerafina was saying before, is practice. And it's this understanding that at any point in time, a joke will fall flat.
Yeah.
So I've got probably 7 or 8 different pickup lines to pick back up again and recover from that and move on.
And the interesting thing about that is you don't just make them up on the spot. These are things that you've developed over a hell of a lot of time.
Yeah. Oh, in fact, to be quite honest, some of them were made up on the spot but worked really well, so I've remembered them and then moved them on.
Yeah.
So how much of that, like, Zerafina, as with your training people, how much improv or making stuff up as you go would you recommend that they inject into a presentation? Is it, should it be all planned or should it be some little bit of interactive? Again, knowing that Russell will say, it depends on your audience. That's his favourite answer, for sure.
I actually think I coach people in working with their videos as well. So right. their in-house videos yep. and how they present. And they're often more nervous about that, say, than even presenting. And one of the things, and that comes across too when I'm coaching people in presentations for their work, yep. is to work from dot points rather than details.
Yeah.
Because people tend to get stuck in a different part of their brain. And if you are free enough to be able to make three dot points and be able to speak to those points and practice speaking to those points, there'll be more naturalness, there'll be more availability.
Because you can tell when someone's reading, particularly on video, whether it's even, now the news readers are pretty good at it, but you can still see their eyes moving and that you don't have, you wouldn't call a news reader your friend, or if you see some video of them acting naturally, it doesn't feel like the character that they've built all over the years.
And on video, it makes you look super uncool. You look so uncool.
Yeah, Serafin is so spot on. It's not about this very scripted, detailed presentation. It's yeah. about the dot points and actually knowing those dot points and how you're going to move from one to another.
Right. So is that, like, that's sort of speaking in a nutshell, isn't it? Mm. You know, you've got a message and you'll have some guidelines. So I think, I remember at high school, it was like many, many years ago, listeners, they'd have the little paper card, the little, what do they call them, little 6x3 cards, and you'd write everything down. You have this wad of cards in your hand, you get up there presenting to your schoolmates, and you're essentially reading off that stuff. Whereas now it's just like, have the three key points and then speak to that. Is that a good way to give a presentation?
I think any time you can get rid of those cards out of your hand, you're actually going to be a far, or perceived as a far better speaker.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. And those dot points are an easy way to get those cards yeah. out of your hands.
Although I do find that I have even put notes on those cards for when I've had some, I was doing a tour around Australia recently and I put all the dot points down and I'd forget to take them on stage with me anyway. But because I'd noted them down, because you think you need to prepare more and you think you need more guidance and you actually do.
Yeah. So how much of the preparation you're talking about doing your practicing and rehearsing and stuff, how much of the actual standing talking versus preparing writing? Because, you know, I've heard there's some, and don't quote me on the research, but I heard it's off the internet, so you know it's true, that actually physically writing things down helps you remember more than typing stuff.
Yes.
So how much of your preparation is done in the performance versus the creation of your presentation?
I would say it's the performance. I'd say they're two separate things, because you want there to be stories.
Yep.
So stories and anecdotes are the things that are going to make things come to life. What I notice in the business world is people talk in abstraction.
Right.
They understand abstract concepts and fail to understand why that might be completely uninteresting to another human being. And it's because we respond to stories. That's how we learn about culture. That's how we learn things through other people's experiences.
Yeah.
So practicing putting some of those things in is important. But people actually often fail to do the physical practice of speaking through it.
Yep.
And what that means is that sometimes then they're up speaking publicly in the shark attack response for the very first time. So if you make that in front of your cat or your dog or your budgerigar or pet rock, that's going to make a really big difference, because you can feel how you feel speaking through it. What am I doing with my body? I knew a man who unfortunately grabbed his pants out of fear, but that sort of scrunched up his pants either side.
Oh, no.
And it's a good thing for someone to point that out to you before you do that
it's
in
not
public.
The look you're after. So speak to the pet rock first, then speak to the pet, whether it's a dog, cat or goldfish, then move up to your kids, move up to some strangers on the street.
Yeah.
And eventually you'll be ready for the audience.
Yeah. Just don't speak to your spouse. They can be quite harsh. Ooh. Hey, we're going to come back after the break and share our pearl of wisdom. Stick around. Welcome back to Taking Care of Business. Today we're talking about speaking skills. We're proudly brought to you by our friends at eView Real Estate. That was a Shake It Out with Florence and the Machine. Hey, because we want to shake out all the bits and bobs that are happening on with us so we can be better on stage. So what helps with that is, of course, the Pearl of Wisdom.
Welcome to Taking Care of Business's Pearls of Wisdom with Jackie Mitchell.
So Jackie, I'm sure, would have a pearl of wisdom to share, but she's in Brisbane, so can't. So what we're going to do is get a pearl of wisdom from the people in the room. So Russell, what would be your pearl of wisdom when it came to speaking skills?
When it comes to speaking skills, it'd be no one knows your script. So what do I mean by that? You're up on stage, you know what your script is. If something goes wrong, nobody out there in the audience knows it.
Yeah.
Because they don't know what your script is. So if something goes wrong and it doesn't affect them,
yeah,
don't bring it up. And I think that's what Serafina was talking about before. There's no need to explain everything that's going inside your head. Otherwise, they will lock you up.
Yeah, yeah. It is that whole, like, you know, get off stage, you go, oh, I forgot to mention this and I didn't say that and I didn't do the other. And so no one knew.
No, absolutely.
So it doesn't matter. Fantastic. That's a good one. Serafina, what is your pearl of wisdom?
My pearl of wisdom would be give yourself permission to learn. We're not looking for a perfect presentation. You're looking for human communication.
And I don't think we've got time to be perfect, do we? Because by the time you're perfect, the world's moved on and it's no longer relevant. So it has to be that, you know, that 80-20 rule, yeah?
Well, you're looking for communication.
Yeah.
And if you're going to humanize your communication, that is necessarily going to be flawed.
Yeah.
And because there's going to be some vulnerability in that.
Yeah,
and if
yeah.
you're perfect, you can't be vulnerable.
Yeah. My pearl of wisdom for everybody today, because people say to me, how do I get better at being a speaker? And my advice to you is do it. Look for every opportunity to speak and take it. Whether it's a speech at a wedding, a 21st, whether it's going to the local Rotary or your networking group, whether it's standing up and speaking at your kindergarten council meeting, whatever it is,
absolutely.
Do it. It is the best way. And on the back of that is fail faster. And I think half the reason people are scared of speaking is they go, what if it goes wrong? And it's like, well, if it goes wrong, you'll learn what not to do. So,
the thing I think about that is I toggle it back to the, will anybody die if you get this wrong? Because I always think of brain surgeons and people who do important jobs like that. And I think, wow, actually nobody will die if I forgot that dot point or if I knock over the glass of water.
And like, and I've seen some things go very, very wrong with presentations. And it becomes one of the most memorable presentations that you come across because it's like, if things go all perfectly, you're just like, oh yeah, that was good.
Mm. And the other thing too is if you ever actually get to a point where you truly believe that you're perfect, the world has moved on because you're no longer relevant. If you're not actually keeping up with continuous learning and continuous development in your craft, you're gone.
I think that's a fair call. Like, there needs to be a bit of humility when you're presenting as well. I think I've seen a lot of presenters who think that they know everything and or are everything.
Yeah.
So as a beginning presenter, you should probably start with a bit of humility, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. And try and just learn. I'm still learning, you know, after 20 years. I think my first radio interview was when I was 14, which is surely only 20 years ago.
Oh, it's not that long ago.
Not that long ago at all. But is to learn something from every presentation.
Yeah.
Is there something I could have done better or done differently? And that way you're not thinking everything has to have been this perfect experience.
Yeah. And I like, you're talking before about don't steal someone else's stories, but you can be inspired by them. Like, I've seen many speakers and go, oh, I like the way they do that, and then adapt it into something that is truly mine. But you can be inspired by others, just don't steal their stuff.
Yeah, it's more of a technique
or
a way they got to a point.
Yeah, yeah.
It still needs to be your own, otherwise people, they can tell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They can always tell.
Fantastic. Hey, Russell, if people want to get in touch with you and find out a little bit more about Crimson Fox branding, how do they do that?
They would do that at crimsonfox.com.au. That's the colour and the animal. And you can find out more about me and my team there.
Go for the colour and the animal.
Always.
And we talked about professional speakers before. If they want to find out more, they go to professionalspeakers.org.au.
That is the one.
Fantastic. Now, Serafina, what we haven't talked about is, as well as Forte Presence, you're also a bit of a performer. I've actually heard you sing and it's quite delicate. So if people want to find out more about you for Forte Presence, how do they get in touch with you?
So they look up Forte, as in F-O-R-T-E. Presence, as in P-R-E-S-E-N-C-E, or if they want to check out my music, and I'm on Instagram too, so I talk about body language and I blog and
I've
got a lot of free resources on my website about presenting. But if they want to find out about my music
and
the shenanigans that go on there,
and
that's
there are
under
shenanigans.
My name. There are shenanigans. That's under Serafina Zara.
Okay. So when you say under, you mean ZerafinaZara.com?
That is correct.
And FortePresence.com?
Yes.
Okay.
If it's not a dot com,
bang an AU on the end of it. It'll be all right. Hey, thank you so much for coming in today. We really appreciate it. I think there's going to be a lot of small business owners out there going, I'm going to do this at my next networking event. I've heard it on Taking Care of Business. I'm going to stand up, say it loud, say it proud, and talk about the solutions that I can offer for my different partners. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Excellent. You've been listening to Taking Care of Business without Jackie Mitchell. She'll come back eventually one day once she's taken care of her own business. Thanks for being with us. We look forward to seeing you next week. We hope you've heard lots of advice and inspiration. You can see Taking Care of Business on Sky Business News on the Small Business Show on Foxtel Tuesdays, 2:30 p.m. Join in the discussion as well on Facebook and Twitter. Check us out. We will add more value to your life. Meanwhile, we look forward to your company next Friday, 11 a.m. In the meantime, take care of your own business. Thanks for listening.